And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I hope I'm loud enough. I'm here for 2 hours tonight, and I got a special call-in number. So I really want to take the time today. We've got a lot of time to call in, talk with you, and find out what's on your mind. There's a lot on my mind. One of the main things I want to discuss today is President Obama's plan to have a new Supreme Court justice. He has the said that the necessary quality is many different things, and one of those main things is empathy. And I want to talk about why the Republicans hate empathy so much, why it is that that is the thing that they are most concerned about. And then I want to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday. Many of you heard my interview with Pastor Bill Keller and Bob coming in and the pastor running away. And, there's been lots of commentary about that. I want to hear what you thought about that. I also want to talk about the incredible things going on in Maine and New Hampshire, the fifth state and possibly the sixth state to have marriage equality in the United States. It just seems like they're coming one right after the other, which is a very good sign. And also, the situation in Pakistan is definitely on my mind. It's not getting a lot of news, but I'm nervous. Are you nervous? Here we spent all this time fighting a war with a country that never attacked us, a country that wasn't a nuclear threat, the country of Iraq, while meanwhile the Taliban left Afghanistan and are invading a much more dangerous country. Are you nervous? I'm nervous. Toll-free number, the special toll-free number, only for today, but I don't want you to forget it because I want you to call in anytime you want. It's 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. One more time, 888-488-MARK. So I want to hear what you have to say about all of these things. To start off, I want to play what President Obama said were his concerns about a new Supreme Court justice, the things that he considered most important in choosing someone to replace Justice Souter. This is President Obama from last week.
Now, the process of selecting someone to replace Justice Souter is among my most serious responsibilities as president. So I will seek somebody with a sharp and independent mind and a record of excellence and integrity. I will seek someone who understands that justice isn't about some abstract legal theory or footnote in a case book. It is also about how our laws affect the daily realities of people's lives, whether they can make a living and care for their families, whether they feel safe in their homes and welcome in their own nation. I view that quality of empathy, of understanding and identifying with people's hopes and struggles as an essential ingredient for arriving at just decisions and outcomes. I will seek somebody who is dedicated to the rule of law, who honors our constitutional traditions, who respects the integrity of the judicial process, and the appropriate limits of the judicial role. I will seek somebody who shares my respect for constitutional values on which this nation was founded and who brings a thoughtful understanding of how to apply them in our time. As I make this decision, I intend to consult with members of both parties across the political spectrum, and it is my hope that we can swear in our new Supreme Court justice in time for him or her to be seated by the first Monday in October when the court's new term begins. And with that, I would like you to give Robert a tough time again.
That, of course, was President Obama. He intervened in his press conference, the one with Robert Gibbs. He went in the middle of the press secretary in his ordinary briefing, something that, by the way, I don't know of any other president that's done. I think it shows partly who this man is, President Obama. He had some news to give, so he just went ahead and gave that news. So you heard it. You heard a lot of things that President Obama wants. Someone who respects the Constitution, someone who recognizes the rule of law, someone who also doesn't just believe in abstract legal principles, but someone who has empathy with ordinary people's lives. Now, you can imagine which part it was that concerned Republicans the most. The thing that made them the most angry, the thing that made Republicans and all the hosts on Fox News and all the heads of the Republican Party and all the talking heads from Mary Madeline to that long blonde-haired shrew whose name I will not mention on the air, or I try not to mention on the air, they were concerned that Obama would show empathy, that he would choose a justice with empathy. And lo and behold, a word that maybe Americans don't use every day, became the code word. Empathy is a code word for something evil, something awful. Well, what is empathy? And why do Republicans hate it so much? Empathy, of course, is understanding the condition of somebody else. Interestingly, empathy is not even helping your fellow human being. It's merely understanding the situation of your fellow human being. If you have empathy for someone, then you have an understanding. You have maybe a sympathetic understanding for what someone is facing. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to rule in their direction. It just means that you understand how ordinary people think. Well, apparently that's the thing that scares the Republicans most of all. There's nothing that they fear worse than a Supreme Court justice who understands how ordinary people think. Remember, when Republicans want ordinary people, they've got to hire one. They've got to find one. They've got to find an actor. They have to find, a Samuel Wurzelbacher, who apparently is not a licensed plumber and is not going to buy his own business, but pretend that he's Joe the Plumber, who's going to buy his own business, and put him before the camera as Joe Average. Interestingly, I don't know if you heard this, but Joe the Plumber, who, let's face it, I don't have any respect for Joe the Plumber. He's someone who's, I got to give the guy credit. He's big at self-promotion and very good at that. I sometimes wish I were as good at self-promotion as Joe the Plumber, but I don't consider him a man to be of extraordinary intelligence or perspicacity as to the events of the day. But Joe the Plumber is now deserting the Republican Party. Apparently, even he's had enough. So when Arlen Specter and Joe the Plumber desert the Republican Party, you know that they're foundering in the darkness. And I also want to talk during these 2 hours, we have lots of time, about the future of the Republican Party. But first, I want to concentrate on this empathy. Why is it that simply understanding the way that ordinary people think, simply having a bit of compassion for their lives, simply doing, as Barack Obama told us, simply looking and recognizing that it's not just about abstract legal theories, but also about the way day-to-day people live their lives. Why do they fear that in a Supreme Court justice? According to the Republicans, they fear empathy. Because if you care about individuals, you're going to violate the law. They think that, you know, caring for individuals is a dangerous, dangerous thing. So what is it? What is it about empathy that scares them so much? Well, a Republican will tell you, and either they'll be lying or they'll be ignorant, but they will tell you, you know, I've had Mike Lane on my show. Mike Lane will tell you that empathy is a code word. It's a code word for judicial activism, which Republicans define based on Justice Souter, who claims that liberals are judicial activists and conservatives are textualists, people who respect the text of the law. The irony is, for me, I've always been quite a textualist myself. I've always been, when I was in law school, at Yale Law School, I remember going and listening to a class in international law. And I said to my professor, well, that's the law. It says thus and such, so therefore that's the law. And he laughed and he said, no, that's not the law. And I said, well, but there it is on the page. Of course that's the law. And he said, no. No one enforces international law. Therefore, it's not the law. And he had a point and I had a point. His point was right, to be sure. If no one enforces a law, if there's no international police force, then a law is only as good as the fact of whether it's followed or not. Right? We have a convention against torture, we have Geneva Conventions, and we have a United States signatory that signs it. But if the Bush administration goes and violates it with impunity, and if the current administration refuses to punish any of them, and if none of them are brought before the International War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague, and if no other country takes action against those officials, then it wasn't the law? It's the old age-old philosophical question. If a tree falls in the forest and no one is there, did it actually fall? If a law is broken and no one prosecutes, was it a law at all? Well, I insisted to my professor that even if laws are not enforced, they are still laws. They are still norms. They still should be obeyed. That we should have a legal system with laws with proper enforcement and proper respect. Otherwise, they shouldn't be on the books at all. And I think that's especially true, even more true, when it comes to American law. So you could argue, hey, I'm the textualist. I always have been. I believe in the strict letter of the law. I think if the law is wrong, you should change the law. And one of the reasons I worked in Congress as a legislator, worked as a lawyer to a legislator, to Congressman Barney Frank, to the House Judiciary Committee, the Homeland Security Committee, is because I recognize the power of the legislature. And when a law is wrong or mistaken or inadequate, you go to the legislature and you get it fixed. That's what you do. That's what you should do. That's what democracy is all about. So I've always been a textualist in the law. But conservatives will tell you, and they will tell you as if they believe it, that they're the textualists. Liberals are the activists. They're the ones who are trying to change the meaning of the law. And the real answer is there's been judicial activism on both counts. And I'm going to say this as a liberal. I want to be fair. There has been judicial activism on both counts. Let me talk first about conservative judicial activism, just so we're 100% clear what's going on here. Perhaps the most extreme case of judicial activism is one I've talked about before. It was the interpretation of the 14th Amendment. Now, the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution is a very, very important amendment. It is one of the three post-Civil War amendments. It is an amendment that was a requirement that the North imposed upon the South in order for the South to rejoin the Union and to remove federal troops from the Confederate territories. It is the amendment that gave former slaves full rights and citizenship. To be technical about it, the 13th Amendment banned slavery. The 15th Amendment gave those former slaves the right to vote. But the 14th Amendment had much broader application. It is the 14th Amendment that says that every single human being born in the United States of America is an American citizen. In other words, you can't have an illegal immigrant come in and then have a child and then a grandchild and a great-grandchild all born in the United States and none of them are citizens. Nope. If you make it to these borders and you're born here, you're an American citizen. There is a clear line. It's an important line. It's one, frankly, that the people on the right really hate because they fear illegal immigrants and so forth. But the clear, bright line is a good one. It's a very good one. And one reason it's a good one is I remember from the time when I studied in Switzerland and I met a group of people who were born in Switzerland and their parents were born in Switzerland, but they were not Swiss. They were Italians. And they were Italians because their grandparents moved from Italy to Switzerland 50 years ago. But these kids, these 20-year-olds, who had been born in Switzerland and their parents had been born in Switzerland, were still not considered citizens, still did not have equal rights, still could not vote. They were second-class citizens. Another example in Saudi Arabia. In Saudi Arabia, the minority of people living there are Saudis. It's even more true in Kuwait. The minority of people living in Kuwait are Kuwaitis. There are, for example, a number of Palestinians, both in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, but neither Saudi Arabia nor Kuwait nor any Arab country, with the exception of Jordan, allows these Palestinians to become citizens. so they live as stateless people, even if they're born there and their parents are born there and it was their grandparents that moved away. It's an extended digression, but my point is clear. The 14th Amendment protects American liberties. It means that we don't have generations of second-class citizens here in the United States of America. That's one thing it does. The other very, very important thing it does is it gives every one of us equal protection under the law. A lot of good stuff in that amendment. But conservatives never liked the 14th Amendment. They don't like that it gives equality under the law. They don't like that it gives everyone who's born here equal rights under the law. They don't like that it gave slaves equal rights under the law. So they decided, well, we have to accept the 14th Amendment. We fought a whole civil war over it. Let's look at another part of it, the part that offers every person equal protection under the law. And conservative says, what is a person? Well, me, I'm a textualist. I'm a strict constructionist. What is a person? A person is a human being. That's not so hard. A person is a human being. What else is a person? It's a single individual. I can't think of any other definition. It's not even, you can't even say adult or child. A child is a person. Maybe you could have some argument about a fetus. Some conservative could, I don't think a fetus is a person because I don't think it lives independently of other human beings. We can argue about a fetus. But a person is a human being, a living human being. Next question, not a difficult one, not the decision of the United States Supreme Court in the late 1800s. As many of you know, the Supreme Court in that day, at a time when the Civil War was over, and this was the time of the great era of the robber barons, of the massive businesses that controlled massive amounts of the American economy, the J.P. Morgans, the John D. Rockefellers, the Andrew Carnegies. The Supreme Court declared in the late 1800s that a person is either a human being, I'm glad we get to be part of the definition, or a corporation. A corporation is a person because the law treats a corporation as a person for some purposes, and therefore the Supreme Court held that the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, the amendment that the abolitionists died for, that the entire Union Army died for, that the slaves cheered about, the amendment that was the culmination of everything that that Abraham Lincoln had worked for, was really all about protecting corporations. Now, I will be the first to admit that in the law, even prior to the 1890s, that corporations were sometimes treated as legal persons. Yeah, I mean, they could sue. You could sue them. They could have lawyers. Human beings, you can sue. You can sue them. They can have lawyers. Did you know that if you're fighting over a piece of property, if two people disagree on a stack of money in the bank or on who owns a car, that car alone could have its own lawyer? So I guess according to that theory, everyone's a person. But here's my long-winded point, and I think you probably got it by now. A textualist, a strict constructionist, someone who looks at the text of the law and says, it means what it says it means, someone like me says, that a person means a person means a person. It means a human being. That's all it means. If you want to give corporations rights, go right ahead. Let the majority of people voting through their elected representatives choose to have this legal fiction called a corporation set up for whatever business purposes it should be set up. It can be licensed by the state. And it has no rights other than the rights conferred on it by the state. Because you know what? It doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a corporation. It's a legal fiction. It's a legal idea. It's just a concept. It's a concept like words on a page. And you can choose to create these business entities and to say that you're not liable if they're sued. You can do whatever you want. United States or the various 50 states. But it's wrong to pretend that the 40th Amendment to the Constitution was designed to protect corporations. I'm a strict constructionist. I believe in historical intent. I believe in looking at the intent of the founders. And I'd like you to find me a single abolitionist, a single Union soldier. I'd like you to find me someone in Abraham Lincoln's cabinet, or Abraham Lincoln himself, that will tell you, oh, yes, we're fighting this war to protect corporations. That's why we've got to change the Constitution. I suggest to you that would be a very difficult thing to do. So I am a liberal strict constructionist, and I encourage you to be so too. Sometimes liberals fall into this myth that conservatives follow the law and liberals are very lax with the law. And I encourage liberals to take that back. You can be a conservative strict constructionist. You can be a liberal strict constructionist. You can be a conservative activist, judicial activist. You can be a liberal judicial activist. I myself believe if you don't like the law, change it. Or, you know, practice civil disobedience, violate it, and recognizing the consequences. Maybe that's just my logical mind. But what brings me back to Barack Obama and to his choice of a new justice was the claim by the conservatives that empathy is a code word for judicial activism. Now, Republicans invented code words. They're the ones who took the estate tax and started calling it the death tax. I guarantee you, in no place in the law is the estate tax ever called the death tax. The estate tax taxes the extremely wealthy estates after individuals have died and leave millions and millions of dollars behind. That's what the estate tax does. But Republicans didn't like the estate tax because it prevents them from giving wealth from generation to generation. It prevents them from having trust babies who are born into wealth and never have to work. And they don't want to get their hands dirty working because, you know, you can get dirt under the fingernails and that's gross. So they didn't like the estate tax and they started calling it the death tax because it sounds like you're harming the person who died and that sounds bad. When, of course, since you can't take it with you, you aren't harming the person who died. So they're big with the code words. Remember states' rights? Republicans, they believe in states' rights. And that's why they oppose civil rights. That's why they believe in Jim Crow laws. That's why they don't think that blacks should be able to vote. States' rights was a code word for KKK. A code word for denying African Americans equal rights under the law. Now states' rights is part of our system. We have federalism. In general, lots of things are left to the states. I'm a believer in states' rights for most things, except civil rights, because civil rights trumps states' rights. The 14th Amendment trumps the 10th Amendment. The 10th Amendment is the one that says that powers not given to the federal government belong to the states or to the people. And the 14th Amendment says equal protection under the laws. So when Alabama or Mississippi or South Carolina vote, the majority of them vote that blacks shouldn't have equal rights, well, tough. Because the 14th Amendment trumps that. Civil rights trump states' rights. But Republicans and conservatives, and frankly there were some Democrats in those days, shouted states' rights as a code word for denial of civil rights. Now, Republicans don't really believe in states' rights. Look at the fact, I'm going to talk about this, that state by state, they're having marriage equality. And I want to congratulate Maine on being the fifth state after Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa, and Vermont. And New Hampshire's around the corner. And hopefully the California Supreme Court will keep its census together. And there's some other states around the pike. New York, New Jersey, I expect to come very soon. But conservatives who want to overturn the rights of the people of these states don't believe in states' rights. Right? They believe in it forcing their opinion down the throats of everyone else. In the District of Columbia, I am proud to say I helped lead the charge to have the District of Columbia ratify the marriages of other states, which, after all, they should do under the Constitution, the Full Faith and Credit Clause anyway, to recognize marriages of gay couples in other states as equal to marriages of anybody else in the District of Columbia. And now we have Congress trying to overturn that because the District of Columbia is not a state and Congress still treats it like the occupied territory that it is, the last territory of the United States. And so you have a congressman from Utah determined to make sure the people of D.C. don't get to vote for their elected representatives for marriage equality. You see, when states offer, when states deny equality under the law, Republicans believe in states' rights. But when states grant equality under the law, Republicans are opposed to states' rights. In other words, it's got nothing to do with states' rights. A number of Western states, you may well know, legalized marijuana, at least for medical purposes. And conservatives say, no, 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 we don't believe in states' rights. No, 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 no. I don't care what the people in California voted for. The federal government must force them to deny their citizens the right to use marijuana. Oh, but the citizens of California voted to deny gay people equal rights? Oh, well, yeah, we have to support that. They got it exactly backwards. In my view, there should be states' rights on questions like marijuana. There should be states' rights on virtually everything except when the federal government trumps it. And when does the federal government trump states' rights? When it comes to civil rights. Whether it's gay equality or African-American equality or anybody else. So I found it fascinating when conservatives took Barack Obama's very natural, normal response saying he wants a judge with empathy, a judge that understands how ordinary people live. And that was the thing that they thought was a code word. Listen to the Republicans talk about empathy.
The president's focus on empathy is a code for bringing a judicial activist to the court.
He wants an empathetic justice on the Supreme Court. Empathetic. Is that code to you for an activist judge?
This is that empathy quotient is code word for jurisprudential social engineering.
A judge has to be a person of empathy. What does that mean? Usually that's a code word for an activist judge.
See, got it? That was Orrin Hatch and Mary Madeline and some commentators. Empathy is a code word for a judicial activist. Empathy is a code word for not following the law. Really? Because I don't think the Supreme Court in the 1890s showed much empathy when they disregarded the law and said that person doesn't mean person, it means corporation. I don't think that was a very empathetic thing to do. You see, the real empathy that they fear is not judicial activism. They want to use judicial activism because they want to pretend that Democrats don't follow the law, as if George Bush was a law-abiding man who followed the Geneva Conventions with a strict adherence to the words. No, empathy means looking out for the little guy. Empathy is the idea that justice is blind. That statue, that famous statue of blind justice with the scales, that you weigh both sides. That a poor person has as much right to get into court as a rich person. You know, it's very hard for a poor person to get into court. Rich people can afford old lawyers, people like me. Poor people, you got to hope that the ACLU or the NAACP Legal Defense Fund or maybe a gay legal defense organization or a Mexican-American legal defense organization, they don't have much money. That they're going to defend you. Maybe a legal aid organization. What if you're fighting against your landlord? What if you're fighting against a bank that's trying to foreclose upon you? And what if you're right according to the law, but the bank has billions of dollars and you've got, well, not much. You're being foreclosed upon. To me, a judge with empathy is someone who recognizes that anyone who walks into that courthouse door has a right to be heard, whether it's a prisoner on death row, whether it's an illegal immigrant, whether it's someone detained in Guantanamo Bay, whether it's a poor person trying to protect their house, whether it's a gay American simply trying to have the same rights that a straight American has, whether it's an African American who has been brutally beaten and the perpetrator is being tried for hate crimes. I want the law to be followed. I am a strict constructionist, but you know what? You can be a strict constructionist and still have empathy. You can. Yesterday I had a very long discussion. Many of you heard it. It got increasingly contentious as Bob stepped in with Pastor Bill Keller, who is a very powerful, popular pastor, apparently. Boy, that's a lot of peas. Powerful, popular pastor, apparently. He apparently gets 2.4 million hits on the largest prayer website in the country, at least so he claims. And yet he couldn't make much of a legal argument. He certainly didn't make an empathetic argument. I was arguing for empathy. He had none. He had no empathy for Bob's child brutally beaten up. He had no empathy for Matthew Shepard. He said, sure, just punish them the way that anyone else is. And we had a long discussion, I'm sure you heard it, about whether or not hate crimes are more severe than ordinary crimes. Is a lynching worse than a murder? Is a terrorist crime worse than an ordinary crime? Is there a difference between someone who says, I'm beating you up, and someone that says, I'm going to get all you people? We'll talk about it a little bit later on. But my point is that I was a strict constructionist at the same time. I gave him the law. I showed Pastor Keller chapter and verse. The law said that if you commit violence, and it's a hate crime, it is more severe than ordinary violence. But simply speaking hate, whether you're the KKK or Pastor Bill Keller, simply saying you hate someone never sends you to prison. And so what was Bill Keller doing? He was saying, no. They'll be judicial activists. They won't follow the law. They won't follow the legislative interpretation. And I'll get in trouble. So I want you to remember, whenever there's this discussion, it's going to come up a lot when they have Justice Souter's replacement. You're going to hear not just from Fox News, not just from conservatives, but from CNN and MSNBC, this lie that conservatives believe in strict rendering of the law and liberals don't. A lot of that, I got to say, comes from Roe v. Wade. I'm going to talk about that after the break. But a lot of it comes from simply spreading this kind of propaganda. And there is nothing inconsistent about being liberal and believing strictly in the law. You know, back in the late 1990s, the Republicans made big hay over the fact that, oh no, Bill Clinton lied about an affair. As if other men of both parties haven't lied about affairs. Oh, we've got to impeach the guy. We've got to throw him out of office because he lied about an affair. Which I'm sure was quite insulting to Hillary Clinton. But that's about it. George Bush lied about torture. George Bush said we didn't torture anybody. George Bush said that we didn't have secret prisons. George Bush said that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Dick Cheney said there was a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. Lies, 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 lies that led to thousands of Americans dead, tens of thousands of Americans wounded, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead, and millions of Iraqis exiled. Which lie was more severe? Which breach of the law had more serious consequences? Why is it that Republicans don't want to enforce the law when it comes to torture? Who is being the activist now? It is Democrats that are insisting on the strict rule of law. It's people on the left that are saying, hey, President Obama, we've got to go after these guys. And it's the right saying, oh, law, schmaw, don't worry about it. So what if Dick Cheney committed treason? Move on, move on. But don't let Bill Clinton lie about sex. When we come back, I'd really like to hear from some of you about this question of the law. How strictly should we view the law? Should the words of a document, of a legal statute, be taken literally? Should we look and see, as they teach us in law school, what the people who wrote the document believe, the legislative history they call it? And does it matter whether you're a liberal or you're a conservative? I actually believe, and this is, I may get in trouble now with my liberal bona fides, I happen to believe that Roe v. Wade was not a well-written decision. Run now. Criticize now. No, I don't think it's well-written. I think I can step back far enough and say that while I am extremely pro-choice, Roe v. Wade was not the best written decision. I don't see it really coming out of purely out of privacy laws. Now, I think it is there in the Constitution. I happen to like Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's reformation of Roe v. Wade. She bases it in part on the 14th Amendment, equality for women, and in part on the one that I think is the strongest argument, the 4th Amendment. That's the one that says the government cannot seize your papers, persons, or effects without a warrant. Now, most people think about the 4th Amendment. That's the search warrant amendment. That's the part that says, you know, they can't go into your and find your private papers without you know, getting a warrant. But it says persons, and I am a literalist, and it seems to me if the government can't seize your person without a warrant, then the government can't require women who are people to do with their bodies what the government wants them to do without a warrant, without reasonable cause. So I'm willing to admit, I'm willing to recognize when I think opinions aren't as well written as they are. I like the result of Roe v. Wade, but I'm willing to say, okay, this reasoning wasn't as good. It wasn't as bad as, say, Bush v. Gore. But I think it would behoove liberals to admit that some liberal opinions are well written, some are less well written, and to adhere strongly to the rule of law. Sometimes liberal activist groups say things like, you know, we believe the law is evolving. Well, the law is evolving. That's true. But you can believe in an evolving law and still believe in strict construction of the law. Right? Women were not understood to be persons, perhaps, at the time the 14th Amendment was passed. They didn't have the right to vote. Right? African-American slaves were considered three-fifths of a person. That was how they were construed. Only white male Christians that owned property could vote in the early colonies. So maybe the word has changed. I happen to think a person is a human being, and I happen to think that I'm taking the document literally. But I want to hear from you on anything I've said or on the choice of a new Supreme Court justice, whether you think that you're a judicial activist or maybe a strict constructionist. Can you show empathy and show respect for the law? I think you can. Let me hear from you. 888-488-MARK is a special number today, 888-488-6275. Call in and let me know what you think about all of this. Let me know whether or not you are a strict constructionist. Be right back after this.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
If you're looking for a great deal, look no further than the CX4600 All-in-One from Epson. No one else gives you so many great features at such a brilliant price, like individual cartridges of DuraBrite ink for water, smudge, and fade-resistant photos, and built-in card slots to print directly from memory cards. You can also restore your old photos to their original beauty, all for around $99 after a $30 mail-in rebate. Buy now and also get a $20 reward card back by mail. For more brilliant deals, visit Epson.com/promotions.
If you give me a fish.
If you give someone a fish.
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
As time flows on, there are places we return to again and again. Precious places. Timeless places. Places that, with your help, can endure forever. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places around the world.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. There's a lot to talk about today. I've been spending most of the time on Souter and who we're going to replace him with. Okay, I haven't spent that much time on Souter, but but importantly on who to replace him with. And I kind of want to give you the terms that you're going to hear. This shouldn't be a controversial appointment. Justice Souter was left of the center of the court, the center of the court being Justice Kennedy, a conservative. And, of course, all that matters when you have nine justices is who is in the center, right? I mean, it doesn't matter, for example, that Souter and Stevens were both Republicans. Right now, on the court, seven of the justices were appointed by Republicans. Two, Breyer and Ginsburg, by a Democrat, Bill Clinton. The other seven by Republicans. The two they call liberal, who are not liberal, they're moderate conservatives, are Justice Stevens, appointed by Ford. Well, he may be approaching liberal. He's 86 years old, and I hope he lives a very long life. I'm a big fan of Justice Stevens. And also, Judge Souter, appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush. He was one of those Yankee conservatives that turned out to have an independent mind of his own. But because he's left of Justice Kennedy, who, let's face it, is a pretty damn right-wing judge, it was Kennedy, after all, who provided one of the very vital five votes that said that the American people are not allowed to choose their president in 2000. But the Supreme Court would make the choice, and they would make the choice without even counting the votes. A very radical thing. Indeed, and I kind of made my career on Bush v. Gore. That's why I came to Washington in the first place. But in many ways, I think Bush v. Gore, as a matter of logic and a matter of law, was more egregious than Dred Scott. Now, don't get me wrong. Dred Scott's results were awful. Dred Scott is that famous opinion from right before the Civil War, 1857, I believe. The one that said that slaves were property, and therefore, basically, there are no free states. If a slave escapes to the free states in the North, then you have to return someone else's property. How could Bush v. Gore be more awful than Dred Scott? Well, again, not in its consequences. After all, Dred Scott led to the bloodiest war in American history and led to, at least in its terms, to putting a man back in chains. Awful thing. But Dred Scott, as a lawyer, I can safely say, looking at logic, Dred Scott made sense according to the law of that day. If the law says that slaves are property, if the law says that slaves aren't human beings, the Supreme Court was faithfully interpreting an extremely awful, oppressive law. Okay. Horrible thing. But legal. You can have oppressive laws. Bush v. Gore, in contrast, had zero basis in the law. It was purely made up. It was fantasy. It wasn't based on law at all. And I will never get over Bush v. Gore. I read people are like, oh, we already have Obama as president. Mark, move on. No! Not from the coup d'etat that took my president, President Al Gore, the one that I and the majority of Americans elected, the one that was chosen by a majority of the rightfully chosen electors, including the electors from Florida, since the majority of Floridians voted for Gore. When they removed my president from office, It's not just that it led to, you know, Iraq and torture and all those things that Bush did. I mean, let's face it. He could have been voted in to do those things. But it led to the Supreme Court. Roberts and Alito. Right-wing justices. Justices to the right of Justice Kennedy, who did this awful Bush v. Gore decision, are on the court now because the court broke the law. See, I'm one of those weird lawyers that actually believes in the law. Like I said, it goes back to my textualist days in law school. I believe in respecting the letter of the law. And when the Supreme Court said, forget the law, we want Bush, there's no word other than a coup d'etat to explain it. It's exactly what some tin pot dictatorship in Latin America that we might look down upon has done. Heck, even in the Ukraine, a former client state of the former Soviet Union, when one guy won the election and the other guy declared victory and the court declared victory for the other guy, the people burned the parliament down. Remember that? In Serbia, a nation that committed genocide against the people of Kosovo, when they elected someone and their courts chose someone else, they insisted on a re-election, and frankly, Serbia has been better since. If Serbia and the Ukraine, nations without a history of democracy or constitutional republics, if they can get it right, why were Americans so calm in 2000? Only because nobody called it what it was. See, I think the law has meaning. I see that Cobwebs wrote in the chat room that the Constitution is like the Bible. 20 people will give you 20 different views on what it means. I disagree with you, Cobwebs, but I hope you'll call in to defend your position. Because, you and I get along. I like you. You usually agree with me. I don't think so. Yeah, on some things, there are ambiguities. I'll admit that. For example, the question of whether D.C. can have a representative or not. Well, there's one part of the Constitution that says Congress has authority over all of D.C. That seems to me to say that if Congress wants to give D.C. a representative, they can. There's another part that says, well, the various states choose a representative, and D.C. is not a state. Of course, there are other provisions that say various states include D.C. So I actually think one has the better argument. But usually you can make an argument for it. See, that's what's so good about the law. I'm weird in that I actually believe in it. I mean, professors laughed at me, this idea that there could actually be meaning in the law. But it does have meaning. The law does constrain people. If we don't respect the law, we get torture. We get people like Condoleezza Rice saying, well, you know, the president authorized it, so it was legal. Richard Nixon has said that. If the president does it, it's legal. Yes, there are tough questions in the law. I admit that. Is a right to freedom of choice for a woman's body, is that in the Constitution? Well, I argue it's in the Fourth Amendment. I can see someone arguing to the other side. There are close questions in the law. But there's some questions that aren't close. One of which is that the states choose the electors based on their law, and the U.S. Supreme Court has no right to overturn that. That's why Bush v. Gore was an awful decision. My point is that Justice Souter, in taking the new justice, in taking Justice Souter's place to the left of Justice Kennedy, probably won't change the balance of the court that much. And frankly, the next justices who are expected to retire, Justice Stevens, who is 86 years old and, like I said, in good health, and I wish him 20 more years, at least, or Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who I have tremendous respect for, but who has pancreatic cancer, and I wish her well as well. They are the two justices that were expected to retire first, not Justice Souter. 69-year-old Justice Souter, he's a relative youngin' on the court. No, we can't change the court's direction unless one of the big five retires. Somebody like Scalia or Kennedy. Alito, Roberts, Thomas, they're young men. they are probably going to be on for a while. And they're some of the most conservative people on the court. And unless they change, I don't think we can expect to see change in the law. So what will happen when Justice Souter's replacement is chosen? It's going to be a lot of song and dance, a lot of political theater. Neither both the right and the left know that the replacement won't change things very much. But I think the right will have a whole big Sturm und Drang, a whole big loud thunderclap, because they know that should Justice Scalia have a heart attack and die and get off the court, well, then things really matter. If Justice Kennedy should retire, then things really matter. And they want to make this as hard as possible so that if an important shift to the court happens, they'll be ready. But I always think it's important to remember history. It's always important to remember that the Republicans who insisted, for example, that you can never filibuster a Supreme Court justice, even though they themselves filibustered a Supreme Court justice when President Lyndon Johnson chose Abe Fortas in the 1960s. Well, you know, they don't really want to talk about that too much. But it cannot be the law that they get to filibuster when they're in the minority and we can't when we're in the minority. So the Gang of 12, remember that? John McCain and 5 Republicans and 6 Democrats joining together saying you don't filibuster judicial nominees. Well, that's it. That's the precedent. No filibusters. Which means that we don't even need all 59, it'll be 60 when Franken gets on the court, 60 votes. Just a bare majority. It's time to get a really good person on the court. Now, the person people are most talking about, the conventional wisdom in Washington, which is often wrong, but it's always fun to speculate about, is that the leading choice for justice will be Judge Sonia Sotomayor of the U.S. Court of Appeals of the Second Circuit. Sonia Sotomayor would not only be the second woman on the court, she would be the first Latino on the court, Latina, I should say. She is a daughter of Puerto Rican immigrants, and she's from a housing project in the South Bronx. Talk about someone who would have empathy for an ordinary person. She has diabetes, as it happens. Her father died young, and her mother raised her, and raised her pretty good. She ended up in Princeton and at my alma mater, Yale Law School. She's a very, very intelligent woman, a very, very powerful thinker, and someone who I think would be a wonderful choice. Now, there are many other choices, and I don't mean to say that she's the only one, but she'd be someone I'd be particularly happy with and someone I think would be a solid, solid, liberal, but intelligent, empathetic, legal constructionist on the court. I'm going to take a break now and give you a chance to call in. A reminder, I have one more hour tonight. I'm going late because Bob Kincaid will be seeing Elizabeth Kucinich live, and he will take live questions from the blog. You'll be able to type in your questions, and he will take them for you. I don't know that we've done this before on the Horn. It's kind of exciting. But it means that I get another hour with you since Bob's in traveling time. I hope you will stay tuned for that hour. And I hope you'll call in and talk about judicial philosophy. We have other things to discuss, though, in the next hour. I want to talk about gay rights, marriage equality, which seems to be catching wildfire around the country. I want to talk about yesterday. I want to know what you thought about yesterday. Did you hear both my and Bob's dialogue, shall we say, with Pastor Bill Keller? I was good cop, Bob was bad cop. Who's more effective? What do you think? Bob, I'm sure, made you feel better. But what'd you think about that exchange? Let me know. And I also want to talk about the troubles in Pakistan, because I am very much worried about them, and I think you might be as well. So, we're going to take a break. I'm getting a chance to hear my entire theme song, something that rarely occurs, but gives me this opportunity. And please call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back at the top of the next hour. See you then.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello and welcome to the special second hour of the Inside Scoop today. I couldn't convince any of you to call in, but I want to encourage you still to do so at 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. You don't have to be a constitutional lawyer to express your opinion, I promise you. Really, it's not required. A lot of people are still talking about yesterday. By the way, I hope you enjoyed hearing the entire bumper music. I rarely play the entire song. That is Christa Berg, Into the Light, and he is a, I think he's Irish, but he's got some great music. For all the time I've used him, you could go and pick up an album. He's some of my favorite music. Very meaningful stuff, got a nice beat, but also some meaning. But a lot of people are still talking about yesterday, and if you didn't hear yesterday, I want to encourage you to catch that. I've been told it is one for the books. And you can get that right now, in fact, at my website, radioinsidescoop.com, or any other time. It will be on my website for now into eternity, or as long as Ben Birch is in good health. Because all you have to do, by the way, if it's on the front page now, but if these things go by the wayside, I have a search, and all you have to do is remember something, you know, hate crimes. Just look up hate crimes, and you'll find it, or anything else. But there's a lot of talk about it, I think, because the pastor, and I shouldn't be surprised about this because I knew he had no argument going in, but whenever I prepare in a debate, I'm always ready to be surprised, which sounds strange. How can you be ready to be surprised? But I knew there was no logic to his legal claims. Just like I knew there was no logic to Bush v. Gore. But I expected a better argument. Why? I don't know. This is a guy who has the largest, so he says, Christian website in the country. This is a guy who has been on hundreds of radio shows talking about hate crime. This is a guy who promotes himself as an expert against the hate crimes bill. Now, you know, I admit I have some expertise myself. I happen to help draft it. But I wasn't the first to draft it. The hate crimes bill has been around for a long time, ever since the brutal murder of Matthew Shepard. Indeed, it was around even before then, used to protect people who were discriminated on the basis of race or color or national origin or religion. So I hardly get credit for, frankly, the drafting that I made was making small tweaks here and there. But this guy's supposed to be the expert. I mean, I do shows on lots of things. This guy was supposed to be the expert, and he was going to be the expert to say that this was going to harm free speech. And I believe in free speech. And I understand there are nations that don't. I mean, I understand why, for example, Germany and Austria prosecutes people who teach the Holocaust is fake. I respect that manner, particularly in those countries after what happened there. But in our country, Nazis can speak, Ku Klux Klan can speak, and yes, Pastor Bill Heller can say whatever he wants about them evil homosexual activists, as he called people who believe in equality under the law. Texas Betsy, I did check on the Canada situation. And it appears that Canada, from what I read, does allow for punishment of hate speech as an incitement to riot. And that is a legal choice the Canadian people have made, that if you preach hate, if you preach, for example, the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, if he preached to everyone, go out and, you know, harm black people, he would be prosecuted under Canadian law, not under American law. We have the First Amendment. And as much as I like to see those bastards go to jail, I understand the logic of our amendment. There's something kind of clean and glorious about the idea that anyone can say anything. And I respect our law. I actually think it's the better way to go because, as I've often argued, the best way to kill cockroaches is to expose them to the sunlight. If you don't let them out into the sun, they'll just go into the dark holes and recesses and dark places, and soon there'll be lots more of them. I think when we bring out the Nazis and the KKKers and the hate mongers like Bill Keller out, and we let them speak, they sound awfully silly. That's why I bring right-wingers on my show, and I you know, I get criticized for that. Again, you have the right to criticize me. That's your free speech rights. In fact, I encourage you to honor those free speech rights now and call me at 888-488-MARK. But I understand that a lot of people on the horn don't want to hear from these right-wingers. But I believe in bringing them on my show. And the reason I believe in bringing them on my show is I think I can show how insipidly weak their arguments are. This was not just a pastor I picked at random. This wasn't some poor mega preacher. Well, they're not poor. None of them are poor. But I didn't just pick this guy out. This guy found me. He found me and hundreds of others, and I know that 99% of talk radio is right-wing. I know that. I'm sure the pastor did not expect the challenges that I gave him. But still, you think he'd be better at it? He kept saying that, no, okay, right, you're right, Mark, I guess you're right, that the law, there's nothing in the law that harms me, but I'm still worried. Well, if you're worried, Pastor, and it's got nothing to do with this law, then stop opposing this law. Just be worried. And he seemed to understand only when we were talking about the hypothetical of Muslims harming Christians. That was the only hypothetical that he could relate to. He didn't seem to relate to white kids beating up black kids or straight kids beating up gay kids. Or, frankly, a lot of times they're closeted gay kids beating up openly gay kids. He didn't have to have much sympathy for Bob's kid, who I have to tell you, I am proud and honored, and I can say this because I know Bob's not listening. Bob has an incredible son. When he describes Ferg on the air, and I hope I'm not being too out of school here, when I first heard about the incredible, horrific mistreatment that this young man had undergone, I feared that this young man would understandably suffer from a kind of post-traumatic stress syndrome. And I would not have been surprised at all, nor would I have blamed the lad, had he been very introverted and scared and depressed. He'd have every right to be. But he wasn't. Did you hear him yesterday? I was just standing by. I wanted to hear because I had gone another hour into Bob's show yesterday. And so I listened into the second hour of his show, and I heard an extremely articulate and powerful presentation by a young man that, no, he didn't know the little rules of the game. You know, you can't mention people's names and things like that. But this was I think he's 15-year-old, who really made his case and did so with restraint and with dignity. And I don't know. To me, that made it all the more horrific that he was suffering as much as he was suffering in that school. It made it all the more horrific that this young, intelligent man, full of life, full of vivacity, young boy, I should say, young man, could be so powerful in telling his story. And the preacher didn't give a damn. He really didn't. I finally have a caller. Let me welcome you to the show. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
It's Betsy.
Hello, Betsy.
Hi,
welcome.
Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Talk to me. You're on the air.
Okay. I listened today to yesterday's show,
mm-hmm.
your show and Bob's show, and I have to say I was completely impressed with the way that both of you handled the situation. And I was also horrified at what is going on in a middle school in West Virginia. I have taught in middle schools in New York. I have taught in middle schools in Texas. I currently work in a high school in Texas. And our curriculum might be completely backwards in Texas right now. They are changing astronomy to include the fact that the world is 6,000 years old. But other than, our curriculum craziness, that would never be allowed to go unpunished, unanswered. And any of the things that he was talking about would not be tolerated here.
And you know, well, Kelsey, you live in Austin, which is
the cities north of us are tolerate even less. I mean, they throw kids in jail. It's actually a little primitive considering that these are kids, but this stuff would absolutely not be tolerated.
And Betsy, the place that would throw kids in jail for this kind of horrific behavior, is that a red area of Texas or a blue area? I'm just curious.
A red area.
Okay, interesting.
It's a red area, but they would not tolerate fighting. They would not tolerate. They might tolerate some of the spoken insults.
Right.
But they certainly would not. I mean, I think they might tolerate that more than Austin does, but they certainly would not tolerate children being hurt by other children in school.
Here's the thing, Betsy. And, of course, there was another caller, Vince, who called in at the end of my show. And also talked a bit on the first hour of Bob's show when I was there. And Vince, I don't know how old he is. He's an adult, but he was describing how when he was that age, Vince is says he's straight, but was attacked for being perceived as gay and for defending his friend who was gay. And you know, I remember my own school, and I wasn't out certainly when I was in elementary school. I don't know that I don't think I knew what I was.
We have gay. Our high schools have gay straight alliances.
Well, that's exactly right. They do today. In fact, I'm very, very proud that I have a number of family members, in fact, who have formed those things in their high schools. I can see someone else is calling in too. I'm going to ask that other caller to hang on. Let me finish with Betsy and then call back. The system I have now only allows one call at a time. So I hope that other person calls back. But what struck me is how universal Ferg's story is, that while I completely feel for this kid, and I've met Ferg, and he is a wonderful, wonderful young man, I have to say, but it ain't just about West Virginia or Tennessee, where I grew up, or this happens everywhere, even to the extent that you have kids saying, not beating up other kids, but saying, oh, you know, that's so gay.
Well, my son uses that phrase.
A lot of people do.
He'll say, I mean, he's 15, and he'll say about, you know, oh, that's so gay, or he's so gay, but he doesn't mean homosexual. He doesn't even mean it as an insult.
Right. Well, it's a pejorative thing.
But it's a very mild thing. It's not, you know, it's not fighting words.
Well, you know what? That's true, and you're right about that. And I have to say, I grew up, and I still say it on occasion, and I don't mean to. I don't think I say it much anymore. But I used to say as I grow up, if someone cheated me out of something, or I said that they gypped me. And I didn't even think about it. I just thought it was an expression, English word. They gypped me.
Right.
Gyp comes from gypsy.
Yes.
It's a pejorative term. And I didn't know that until I think I was in my 20s. I didn't realize that this word I'd used all my life would be as offensive to a gypsy as saying, you know, he Jewed him down or niggered or whatever awful pejorative phrase you want to use. So I have tried my best, and I think I've pretty much gotten it out of my vocabulary. But the, you know, I've heard people say it too, and frankly, I'm someone when that happens, I will often say it back to show people how silly the use of the word is. It's kind of the way that blacks can use the N-word or you know, I will say, if someone says it to me, I'll say to a straight person, you're so gay. And I guess I'm allowed to get away with that. But no, I agree with you. That's a relatively minor thing. But the point is that it gives this idea, and Ferg hit it right on the head yesterday. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with it, but when you start harming people and shouting hateful things, it teaches gay kids, who are, after all, everywhere, and we don't always know where they are, that they cannot be open, they cannot be free, they have to live in the closet. And it reminds me whether you could talk about Jews in early Germany, Nazi Germany, you know, before they started killing them all, just the idea they had to hide. Whenever you have to hide your identity, it takes a psychic toll. a powerful psychic toll. If you're not allowed to simply be free to be who you are, it's an extremely painful thing. And so when kids not even know what they're saying and say, you're so gay, and maybe the kid hearing it is gay, that kid hears, oops, I better not let anybody know about my sexual orientation. And one of the things I found really powerful that Vince talked about yesterday was his friend, and I forgot the name of the friend, but the friend that said that he actually was not only abused by his class, he was abused by his parents as well.
For being gay.
Right.
What I don't understand about these fundies, and maybe you can explain it to me, but there is so much that the Bible tells us not to do. Why aren't they walking around with signs telling everyone to inspect their clothes and make sure they don't have linen and wool mixed together? Why aren't they focusing on any of the things about how we treat other people? Why is it all sex?
Well, there are a number of reasons. One is that it's easier, and this is something Jesus said, it's easier to, you know, talk about the speck in your neighbor's eye than the, and I don't remember the exact phrase, the wooden post or whatever, the big stick in your own. It's far easier to talk about other people. And it's one reason why, even on sex, you don't hear fundies talking a lot about adultery, talking a lot about divorce. I mean, adultery is one of the big ten, right? It's one of the Ten Commandments. This isn't mixing linens, which is there in Leviticus, but it's a relatively minor thing. I mean, Ronald Reagan had a divorce. The hero, the patron saint of the conservative movement, is the first and only president of the United States ever to have had a divorce. Now, I don't see any, personally, I see no moral judgment whatsoever on a divorce. If it's not working out, it's not working out. That's not my business.
So I'm not going to say anything.
Well, no, but I don't. If you can preserve a marriage, great. If you can't because you have irreconcilable differences, why should you live in misery? I believe in no-fault divorce. Divorce law is a whole different thing. But the certain thing is I certainly don't hold it against anyone. It's none of my business, really. And yet this is one of the Big Ten. And not only is it one of the Big Ten Commandments, but it's something that Jesus really talked about. Jesus specifically said he was one of the few things where Jesus was stricter than the old Jewish law. Right? Because you could get a divorce under old Jewish law. I mean, you can argue that it was unfair and it was sexist, and that's true, and it required a get, which is the male has to give. But you could get a divorce.
Had a get. Yes, I had to seek a get.
But at least you can get one under Jewish law. Under Christian law, the Catholics are right. Jesus said that what God puts together, let no man put asunder. And he was talking about man and wife. He was saying, once you're married, you are married till death do you part. And I'm sorry, Jesus, and I don't believe Jesus was divine. I don't think he was perfect. And I think he was wrong about that. I think he was wrong to say that no one should ever get a divorce. Sorry, I think you're a moral leader, and I think you said a lot of good things. That one I don't agree with. But the Catholic Church, in order to be true to Jesus' teachings, had to create this idea of an annulment, as if after being together 20 years, you were never married in the first place, kind of a talk about not being a judicial activist there. And the Protestants just dropped it entirely. You will hear very few preachers talk about divorce and talk about adultery. It's a lot easier to talk about something that is in 10% or less of the American population. It's just a lot easier to blame them for that. They're not going to talk about pork, of kosher laws, because they don't keep kosher. It's simply a lot easier to blame someone else than to blame yourself. So, I mean, that's my only reason. The other thing I would say, Betsy, you asked about sex, is I think that sex has always been something that is, how do I put this, it riles people up. It's sensationalistic. It's prurient. People get excited about it. It's a lot easier to understand sex than usury laws, the laws that you can't charge more than a certain interest rate. Listen, usury laws.
Then I would really like to see all of the religious leadership rise up against Bank of America.
Well, exactly. No question about it.
That's where they should focus.
Christianity prohibits usury. It prohibits charging.
There's Judaism.
Well, Judaism actually has less prohibition than Christianity. Judaism prohibits large interest rates, like the ones the credit card companies charges. At least the rabbis have interpreted it to mean they're not against it entirely. It was Christianity that for hundreds and hundreds of years refused to allow any kind of loans with interest, and therefore it was often Jews that were running the economies of a number of these nations back in the Middle Ages, very, very few rich Jewish families, because they would provide the money to rich kings who would take the money and often then expel the Jews. But my point is that Christianity talks about lots of things. It talks about caring about the environment. It says that Jesus said it is easier for the camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. Jesus did not like wealth. I mean, he particularly did not like ostentatious displays of wealth. And yet I see all of these mega preachers in their fancy limousines and their massive mansions doing exactly what Jesus of Nazareth decried. So they are complete hypocrites, no question about it. And it's simply a lot easier to attack someone who is relatively powerless. And yet Jesus hung out with lepers and prostitutes. And Jesus said, let he who is without sin throw the first stone. So I don't think they're being true to their religion. I know they're not being true to my religion. They're not being true to the words of Jesus.
I find the whole thing offensive.
Well, what can I say? And then the question is, how do you deal with someone like Pastor Keller? And Bob and I had different ways of going after him. If you heard the show, you know that for the first 40 minutes or so, I went after him relentlessly on logic. I talked to him about the law. I read to him the law. I explained to him why a hate crime is different from an ordinary crime. And I
thought you did a great job with that.
Thank you.
You did a really excellent job.
And I also explained to him why his free speech wasn't in danger. And every time I asked him a really tough question, like, do you consider a murder or lynching the same? Do you consider burning two logs on your neighbor's property and burning a cross on your neighbor's property the same? Do you consider, you know, a schoolyard fight and a schoolyard fight where epithets are shouted the same? Every time I asked him those questions, he would turn and say, enforce current laws. And I would say, but do you think it's the same crime? Do you really think a lynching is nothing other than a murder? Do you really think that burning a couple logs on your neighbor's property is equivalent to burning a cross? Do you really think that after all the racial hatred in America, you think burning a cross is the same as, you know, burning a couple logs? Really, sir? And then he would change the subject. But Bob brought up, I think, the id. If I was the ego or superego, Bob was the id in me that I wasn't expressing. He was just pure anger. And it was interesting. Of course, the preacher ran away. And, you know, I'd be curious. I know that a lot of people felt good on what Bob did. I thought it was funny, actually. I laughed afterwards. But afterwards, I was thinking, I wonder if that did some good, or did it just make us feel better? And I'm just curious, Betsy, because what do you think?
I don't think that either of you could have ever convinced that man of anything. But I think that the combination of your logic and his passion will help others of us when we are talking to a fundy about the same issues.
Well, we definitely did good cop, bad cop. And I do think it's important that you're good cop for a long time and then be bad cop only at the end. The thing I think that set Bob off, and you'll have to ask him yourself, but I think he would agree that what set him off was, one, the lack of compassion for Bob's son, who really is a wonderful young man who's been brutally mistreated. But also, the fundy said that as soon as Bob started defending equality for gay people, saying that, you know, gay people shouldn't be beaten up, the fundy called Bob a homosexual activist, which I think made Bob both incredulous and angry. I mean, obviously Bob is not gay, But the idea that you must be gay if you defend gay rights.
Well,
you know, the people
that
you...
That's why I called your show, three weeks ago. That was the reason I called your show, to talk about when you had the gay marriage show.
Right.
Because I wanted people to... Because your first three callers were all gay, and I wanted people to see that there were other people interested in this issue who were not gay.
And I really appreciate that. That show, by the way, that's the dialogue show that you hear on the horn every Friday. That is a local show in Washington, D.C. In fact, it has a very wide range. It's a 50,000-watt station. So if you live anywhere in Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, West Virginia, you should be able to get it at 89.3 FM. Contact me if you live in those states, and I'll tell you how to get the show. But I appreciate your calling into that show very much, Betsy, because you brought up a great point about divorce, which I hadn't even thought about, that marriage doesn't just protect people, but the divorce protects people too. And I like the idea of we have to all stick up for each other. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that a number of Jews helped form the NAACP and marched with Martin Luther King. I am proud of the fact that Bayard Rustin and Martin Luther King stood up for Jews. In fact, Martin Luther King is the one who said that, stop attacking. When you attack Zionists, you mean Jews. I was very proud of Martin Luther King for saying that. The point is, if you disagree with Israel's policies, that's fine. But when you start saying that, you know, Jews have no right to have a state of their own, that's anti-Jewish. And even Martin Luther King said that. The fact that Martin Luther King defended two gay men with him, Bayard Rustin, for example, or James Baldwin, two of the great African-American leaders, political leaders, literary leaders. And Martin Luther King was by their side. Coretta Scott King understands that. Now, I think his niece doesn't get it. But Martin Luther King firmly believed that we all have to look out for each other. It's what Pastor Martin Niemöller said after the Holocaust, right? First they came for the trade unionists, and I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the communists, and I was not a communist. And they came for the Jews, and I was not a Jew. And they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out. If you believe in equality, all of us have to protect each other's equalities, whether it's women's rights or Latino rights or African-American rights or Jewish rights or gay rights. We are all Americans. We all have equal rights under the law.
Exactly.
Thanks for your call, Betsy. I appreciate it. I really do.
Okay. Thank you. And thanks for doing Bob's first hour.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm enjoying it. It gives me more time to talk with folks. I know that a lot of times I do a show and I talk a lot, and a lot of people don't want to call in because they think I got so much to say. And it's true. I have a lot to say. But I do want to hear. If you want to take a quick break, and hopefully someone else will call in. Somebody did call in while Betsy was there, but the way the system works today is I only get one call at a time. So I hope you will call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Executive who studied 4 years of math, including trigonometry, and now sits in a huge office and drives a finely tuned luxury car?
Yes, Mr. Only learned basic math in school, so still have a low-paying job and have to live with your mother.
Sorry to bother you, but the vice president who took AP calculus and gets paid more than the rest of us combined wants to know if you'll be leaving early like you usually do to play golf.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll let him know. If you need me this weekend, I'll be working late filling out your expense reports and timesheets because it's the only kind of math I can handle.
Great. Simple addition and subtraction sound right up your alley.
Thanks. Have a good weekend in the country, ma'am.
I always do.
Want to get ahead in life? Learn math. Algebra, trigonometry, calculus. Because math is power. To learn more, log on to mathispower.org. A public service message brought to you by the National Action Council for Minorities in Engineering and the Ad Council.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We've got 26 minutes more. In 26 minutes, Bob Kincaid is live at a speech featuring Elizabeth Kucinich. And I know that you will have your chance to put your questions in there. He said that you can go to either Head On Radio blog, which I have put in the chat room, and also I'm sure he'll be monitoring the chat room as well. And go ahead and be there. Ask some tough questions. You know, I have to admit, and this is one of the areas, the few, where Bob and I differ. I'm not a huge fan of Elizabeth Kucinich. I tend to be, an Obama Democrat, I guess, an Al Gore Democrat. Not that I think that Obama or Al Gore is perfect, but I'm someone who's sort of more in the middle of the Democratic Party. And I know that sometimes people, well, we disagree, and that's okay. Those of us, it's a big tent, right? We can disagree on the left. We can disagree on what works and what doesn't. For me, the way I define the difference between a liberal and a leftist, and this is my own definition, is a liberal, in my view, is someone who believes that the American Constitution, the American system, can and does work. That while it is imperfect, and it needs to be reformed, and it needs to be changed, that we can do so by working within the system, by electing people we want to see in power, by, if the voting machines aren't working, passing laws to make them better, by marching in the streets if we have to, by reforming institutions, and by changing this government, and if we have to, a constitutional amendment, making this country better using the systems of this government. A leftist, in my humble opinion, and if you disagree, maybe you'll call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. In my view, a leftist is someone who wants to overthrow the whole thing. Someone who wants revolution. Someone who believes in throwing out our system of government and installing some other one. And sometimes that's necessary. You can be under such tyranny that the only hope for a nation is revolution. And if that's the case, well, then I support revolution, right? I mean, the people of Darfur who are undergoing genocide right now can't very well work within their government to protect themselves. But the United States of America, no matter how imperfect we are, no matter the fact that we have slavery, that we had slavery, no matter the fact that there's still racism and homophobia, no matter the fact that women still don't have equal rights in America or that unions are mistreated, all of those things I know are true. The fact that coal companies rape the environment. I don't dispute any of that. But I do think that we can work within the system to make it a better system. And that's why, you know, I believe that someone like Denis Kucinich, I respect the fact that he went and tried to win the Democratic nomination. He did not succeed. But I respect the fact that he tried. He said many interesting things, many of which I agree with, and tried to move the Democratic Party to the left, and that's fine. But when a Ralph Nader or a Cynthia McKinney comes in there, and these are people I would consider on the left rather than liberal, their goal, I think, is to bring down the whole system. It's kind of the Leninist strategy, named after Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov, Lenin, of Soviet fame. The idea is the best way to rot a democracy is to try to bring it down. And for all the imperfections of America, and God knows we have huge numbers, I'm still proud of my country. I am. I well up. What, to this day, I live a stone's throw from Washington, D.C., from the mall, and I go and I see the Supreme Court building and I see the Capitol. Heck, I even see the White House. And it moves me. And I'm not ashamed of that. And I think there are some people who think that patriotism is by definition wrong. And I'm not one of those people. Again, that's why I think I'm a liberal rather than a leftist. And again, to be clear, I think that the left and the liberal joined together to elect Barack Obama. And I am, you know, I have criticized Barack Obama, for example, for suggesting that we're not going to go after the people that wrote those torture memos. So I certainly don't agree with everything the president said. But sometimes I think people like Elizabeth Kucinich, and I don't know what she's going to say tonight. I've heard her speech before. Sometimes they're only focusing on the bad things America has done. And I think the fairer thing to do is to recognize the good we've done. And when it comes to the bad, bring it up. Reform this country, make it a better country. In my view, a liberal is an optimist, and a leftist is a pessimist. A leftist is someone who thinks it'll never work right, and therefore wants to tear down what we have. And a liberal is someone who recognizes that it's a mess, but rolls up his or her sleeves and starts to clean it up. Now, I know some of you disagree with that, and hey, call in. Let me have it. Let me hear from you. We still got time. 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. Sometimes I think, though, that the liberal and the left gets conflated in the minds of conservatives, and they start identifying one with the other. Right? I mean, liberals opposed the war in Iraq, as did I. But liberals supported the war in Afghanistan, as did I. The only member of Congress to oppose the war in Afghanistan was Barbara Lee of Oakland, California. Of the 535 members of Congress in the House and the Senate, she was the only one to vote against it. And of course, she has the right to her views. I respect her views, but I disagree with her. To me, that is distinction between liberal and left. I have a caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. This is Susan.
Hello, Susan.
Oregon.
Talk to me.
I'm a leftist.
Okay. You have a right to be a leftist. I respect that right.
But my mantra has been from the 60s on, it's not my country right or wrong. It's my country. If it's wrong, fix it.
Well, I agree with you. I don't believe in my country right or wrong. And I agree. John Kerry, in fact, he didn't create those words, but he repeated those words.
I realize that, but that was what was being romped out when I was a kid. But I don't want to bring the system down. I want to fix it. But I still consider myself a leftist. I am not a Stalinist or anything of the sort.
What is the difference in your mind, Susan, between a leftist and a liberal?
A matter of degree.
Is it just a matter of degree?
Yeah.
What would be the difference? A leftist wants more changes than a liberal wants?
Yeah. I shouldn't say more changes. I should say it's like the difference between what a centrist would call liberal and what I would call liberal. I'm a liberal. Everybody else would consider me a raving leftist.
Well, I don't know whether I would frankly, the way you've described yourself, and of course, the thing about these definitions is they're just, you know, anyone can define anything any way they want.
Yeah.
So, but the way you've described your views, Susan, I consider you a liberal, not a leftist. To me, Kucinich is a left liberal, if you will. But Ralph Nader and Cynthia McKinney are leftists because they are actually trying to tear down the Democratic Party.
Okay, I don't know about McKinney. I do know about Nader, and as far as I'm concerned, well, it's not printable.
But that's why I don't agree with him.
I remember 2001.
Exactly.
Or I should say the 2000 election. But the thing to me is I originally supported Kucinich for president because his political views are more in line with mine. I ended up supporting Obama because I couldn't have Kucinich.
Right, but that's a liberal view. To say, in my opinion, to say I'm going to support who I want in the Democratic primary, in your case, Kucinich, but my guy didn't win, so now I'll support the Democrat over the Republican. To me, that's a liberal thing to do. It's just, you know, we may have disagreements among liberals. We have more left liberals and more moderate liberals. I think there's you know, some would consider Lieberman a liberal. I'm not so sure I would. And, you know, and some would consider Bernie Sanders a liberal. Others would consider him, you know, a socialist. But to me, they're all within the range. I guess, and again, it's all definitional, but to me...
Well, I think the reason that term tends to really set me off...
The term leftist?
Yeah.
Okay.
...is because I'm pretty sure I've got an FBI file.
Right.
You know why?
What'd you do?
I carried a picket sign during the Vietnam War.
But that is, to me, not a leftist thing at all. I mean,
a lot
of them...
Tell that to J. Edgar Hoover, honey.
Well, listen, J. Edgar Hoover thought Martin Luther King was a communist. He wasn't, but Hoover thought so. Hoover thought that anyone who opposed Vietnam was a leftist. I don't have to accept Hoover's definition either. See, in my view, when you protest against the Vietnam War, okay, what you're doing is you are saying, hey, government, I think what you're doing is wrong, and
you're
I want to tell you it's wrong.
It.
But that's a liberal idea, in my view. That's reforming. Let me tell you someone who went too far, and that is William Ayers, right? William Ayers.
He started planting bombs.
Exactly. And in my view, that's not liberal. I don't know what you want to call it. You can call it leftist. You know, I would call it leftist. You may not want to call it leftist. To me...
You know what I would have done if I'd have been William Ayers? Instead of planting bombs, I would have planted what looked and acted like a bomb, with the exception that it didn't have explosives in it, and it had a great big sign that came out that said, boom, you're dead. It gets the same point across, but nobody ends up getting hurt.
Well, I'd be okay with that. I mean, to me, that's almost free speech. I'll tell you, Lon in the chat room is saying that I mean anarchist, and I have to admit,
Hang that one on me.
Well, no, not on you. I don't think, in my view, you're not a leftist. But I mean, you can call yourself whatever you want. But to me, when I think of the left in America, capital L, I think of people who are not willing to work within the system, that basically think the whole thing needs to be taken down. And I hear people say things like that, and I don't know if they really mean it. I mean, I was in Washington, D.C. 2 weeks ago. There was the IMF was meeting, and you know, people can complain about banks all they want. I'll have a sympathetic ear, but they were going and trashing and breaking windows, and to me, you don't solve anything that way. It just looks silly and dangerous.
Yeah. Well, the thing with that is the people who were breaking windows and stuff like that, like they did in Seattle, they all had their faces covered. Now, if you want to make a political opinion known, fine. Have the balls to uncover your face.
I agree. And so, you know, I don't want to make a big fight over labels.
I think it's just that we spent so many years being called leftists, communists, so on and so forth, that it's just one giant scab.
Okay. But I guess my point is I don't want to accept their labels. I want to bring back liberal. I want to bring back progressive. In my view, see, when I think of the far left, I often think of it as very much like the far right. I think there's a lot of intolerance in the far left and the far right.
Yeah.
When I think of the far left, honestly, I think of Soviet communism. When I think of the far right, I think of fascism. And I don't see a huge difference between Stalin and Hitler.
No, I don't either.
So, you know.
They're both crazy.
Well, and they both tend to believe in dictators. And one of the things that bothers me about people who call themselves leftists is they have every right to complain about America. I'm okay with that, things that we've done wrong. But they often don't complain about other horrors in the world, like, for example, the genocide in Darfur. because for some reason they don't seem to think that other countries do awful things too. And to me, part of being a liberal or a moderate, even, is to say, yeah, America's done some awful things, and other countries have done some awful things.
Yeah.
And let's just call it like it is. Let's not pretend that Ahmadinejad is some wonderful character. He's not. Now, that doesn't mean that the right way to deal with him is to, you know, invade his country, which I don't think is right either. But let's not pretend that he's the best thing since sliced bread, because he isn't, and neither is Osama bin Laden.
I agree. Let the chips where they fall where they may, and that goes from foreign policy to war crimes trials to the whole nine yards, all the way up and down the whole society. Let it, you've got a nice piece of paper, it's called the Constitution, follow it.
Well, Susan, I couldn't agree with you more, and I don't think we're that different. You can label yourself how you want. I'll tell you, I only got 10 minutes left, and I have another caller on the line, so let me get to that other caller who's trying to ring in.
One point real fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Reverend's talking points are already out on other call shows. I heard him this morning on Stephanie Miller.
Is he talking about what happened on our show?
No, but he had the hate crimes legislation is all about cutting off my free speech. They're going to throw me in jail.
You know, I almost wish we would, but the sad thing is the law doesn't do that. So, listen, that's all he's got is that scare tactic. And when it's not working with us, he just goes and he tries to find a new audience. That's all.
I loved both your show and Bob's show last night. It was great.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I got to tell you, Ferg was wonderful. I'm told he's listening.
Wasn't he, though?
But I really, really enjoyed listening to him on the air. So, Ferg, if you're listening, kudos to you, sir. That was very powerful. Really good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks for calling,
Sue. I'll let you go. You have a nice day, Mark.
Thanks so much. There was one person who tried to call in while Susan was on. Today we're a little limited because Bob is in the field about to listen to Elizabeth Kucinich, and he's going to be starting his show in 10 minutes. What that means is that when you call in, I can only hold one line at a time just for today. But whoever it was that called in while Susan was on the line, if you want to call back, we still got 10 minutes, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'd love to hear from you. And if you disagree with me, that's okay, too. Listen, maybe you think I'm being too hard on the left. Part of it, I guess, is just, you know, I remember when I think of protests, all right, I remember 2004, and we liberals, dare I say, had a counter-inauguration. There was some question over what happened in Ohio. I don't claim to know what happened in 2004. There's no question in my mind that Al Gore won the 2000 election. I don't think that anyone can question that. He got the most votes in Florida. 2004, it's a little more murky, right? They didn't have enough voting machines in Ohio. Clearly, they did some shenanigans. Whether that was enough to overturn the election in 2004, I don't claim to know. I admit that's an open question. But we were having a counter-inauguration. We were talking about all the things that Bush had done. And I remember, while we were talking, and we had gotten a permit from the District of Columbia, a huge group of people clothed in black, I don't even remember the name of their group. I wish I could remember it. I think Peace was in the name. I can't remember the name. But Answer, it was Answer, A-N-S-W-E-R. They marched in. They literally screamed with their megaphones, and they out-screamed us. We had the permit. We had our little park in D.C., and maybe they thought they were helping us, but they ended up taking over our stage. Now, if they had wanted to come up and speak and be part of the counter-inauguration, I was happy to have them, but it became a shouting match between people who ostensibly agreed with us. We were opposed to the war in Iraq. It's those tactics that, to me, in my mind, fairly or unfairly, and maybe you think I'm being unfair, and if so, you still some time to call in. If not, you can post on my blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. In my mind, they were being like the anarchists. They were taking over. They were not allowing my free speech, our group's free speech. I wanted to join with them in opposing Bush, but they seemed to have their own agenda. And one of the things I've always been afraid of is that you have people trying to co-opt the left. Many people know that in the 1960s there was a very famous counterintelligence program called COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program, put forward by the likes of J. Edgar Hoover, who came in and infiltrated anti-war organizations, simply Americans who felt that the Vietnam War was wrong, and came in there and started to manipulate the organization into supporting violence or anarchy or other unhelpful things until the whole thing fell apart. That's what I fear some of these groups are doing, like the ones that are violent in Seattle and so forth. And so I would hope that no matter how angry we are, and of course it's a lot easier to talk about this now that we have Obama as president. I remember all those long years of Bush as president, I had callers like a longtime caller, I haven't heard from him in a long time, Dave in California. Remember him? He would call into my show all the time and talk about how the voting machines were messed up. And I would agree with him. And I listen, I worked hard on the voting machines. I worked very hard on the law. I worked on it when I was in Congress. I worked on it afterwards. And I would tell Dave that we had made progress. We hadn't made a lot of progress by 04. We made a ton of progress by 06 and even more in 08. Progress to make sure that voting machines had paper records and were fair. And Dave wouldn't believe it. And again, I'm not attacking it, Dave. Dave's one of my longtime listeners. I want Dave to come back. Dave, California, come on back to my show. But he just wouldn't believe it. He couldn't believe the good news. He couldn't believe that 35-plus states actually had fair ballots. He didn't think that Bush would actually allow us to win back our government. There are people that thought that George Bush and Dick Cheney simply wouldn't leave. And I never thought that. Listen, I think Dick Cheney committed treason when he outed CIA agent Valerie Plame Wilson. There's no question in my mind George Bush broke the Geneva Conventions in having torture and secret prison and lied to us about weapons of mass destruction. But even these villains have limits. I don't believe that George Bush planted bombs in the World Trade Center. Sorry, I know all you 9/11 conspiracists. I don't believe it. I think that a lot of the really extreme arguments are used to hide the real things that went on. Things like the coup d'etat of Bush v. Gore. Things like torture. Things like treason. And so I would simply argue, and this is what I consider a family argument. Let's face it, leftists and liberals should stand together against the likes of the neoconservatives. But I would hope to encourage, whatever your definition, I don't really care, I would hope to encourage people to work within the system as Susan did. You support Dennis Kucinich for president? That's fine. That's good. Support him. I disagree with you. We can argue about it. But when the nominee is chosen, we have to all come together. I was a Barack Obama supporter, but I remember thinking that if Hillary Clinton won the nomination, I was going to be 150% behind her. And I said that. And I frankly didn't like when the Obamaites and the Clintonites were sniping at each other because the disagreements between them were very minor. I would hope that when we disagree, and we will sometimes disagree, you and me and Bob and the people on the horn and leftists and liberals, that when we disagree, we recognize that we have more in common than we do opposing. And we may well disagree on this, that, or the other. That's okay. That's fine. That's what, you know, wasn't it Will Rogers that says, I'm not a member of any organized party, I'm a Democrat? It's okay for us to disagree with each other. But let us never fail to recognize that we have a lot more in common than either of us do with Republicans or conservatives or people that would deny equal rights under the law. And that being said, I want to close with recognizing what's happening in New England. Maine has become the fifth state to have marriage equality. 5 out of 50, 10% done. D.C. is on its way. New Hampshire is around the corner. In fact, the legislature of New Hampshire has already passed the law. It's just up to the governor to sign it, and I think he will. New York and New Jersey could probably come in a few months. Oregon, Washington, it's coming, piece by piece by piece. Sometimes you have to take good news for an answer. Whether it's this particular president, whether it's marriage equality spreading across the globe, whether it's the fact that the recession, although I expect unemployment to hit 10%, but I think the worst is over. I don't think we're falling anymore. We're starting to climb out. Sometimes it's okay to be optimistic. It's okay to recognize that we have achieved an enormous thing in electing this man our president, in electing a Democratic Congress. We cannot be complacent. We're not done. We have to continue to press our president and our Congress to do the right thing, to follow the law, to have empathy at the same time as they respect the law. But I think our president is already there. And when we disagree with him, I would hope that instead, that while we should definitely speak out, no one, you're not going to hear me say we should have loyalty to the president. While we should speak out, we should do so in a way that recognizes that the great majority of things he's done, we agree with. And recognize that his way, even when we disagree with it, is far better than the alternative. So, look up, folks. Things are doing much better. And heck, in Pakistan, which I didn't even really get to get to today, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the Taliban. I'm concerned about Pakistan controlling its nuclear weapons. There are things that we as Americans have to join as with Republicans to oppose as well. So recognize, I guess, who the true enemies are. Because with us, it's just a disagreement. All right, that's it. I've had my say for 2 hours. I hope you've enjoyed it. Tomorrow, we've got a special dialogue. That's the show I do with two other local Washington, D.C. hosts. We talk about the banks and the mortgage bill that did not pass. You're going to hear me condemn the Democratic Congress for not passing the bill to allow bankruptcy judges to reform people's mortgages. That's up tomorrow on the Inside Scoop at 5 o'clock. Right now is Bob Kincaid live with Elizabeth Kucinich. This is Mark Levine signing off.